Cord onto this computer. Hi, my name is Todd Adams. I'm with Zen Parenting Radio. This is Zen Talk number 91.
Yes.
I think. And before we get started, Kathy's going to eat her nachos.
I'll be right over here.
And I'm going to share with you guys our friend Brad, who is on the team, who's also our webmaster. I'm going to share my screen with you guys. So if you're listening after the fact, you can always watch this. I just want to show you guys what
and
he's...
And we'll send directions out,
And
right?
we'll send directions out, but I just want to show you guys what he did. Let me share, see if I can do it. Let's see. I'm trying to see if I can get there. So can you guys see my screen? Just give me one of these. Okay. So this is my account and it's got the welcome page. And I'm just going to focus on one thing. There's actually a lot of new things that Brad did, but we have this new thing called Members Directory. And the whole idea is Kathy and I are trying to get creative on how to like kind of get provide the opportunity for you for us all to know each other a little bit better. Because up until this moment, we've been doing this for a few years, we haven't really had a mechanism to like explain.
Well, like, so people know if they're in the same town or
same town,
state.
Geography, if you have a differently wired kid, a lot of different
Books
things
that
like that.
You love that other people may want to read.
So I'm going to go through it. So if you log into your profile, there's my picture and you don't need, and all of this is optional, by the way. You could say, you know what, Ty, great idea. Don't like it. That's fine. But I've just filled out my profile. So I did that by clicking on edit profile and it just takes you through a bunch of prompts. But then if you go to members directory, I just kind of want to show you what Brad did as it loads up here. I'm looking at a blank screen. There it is. So it says Team Zen members. So this information is only as good as the amount of people that populate the information, but I'll just kind of show you what we did. So here's all your names. There's Judy, there's Amy, there's Alicia. So I'm going to scroll all the way down. There's Brad. He kind of filled his out. I'm going to go down to mine and just show you what. So this is kind of like the homepage of the member directory. And it's got my picture, my name, my town. And this column is, are you open to be connected with another team member? It's kind of like
if somebody had questions,
hey, let's have a virtual cup of coffee, that type of stuff. I clicked yes. It also has marital status, so I'm married, so if you're divorced or single. And then this one is your favorite movies, and this one is your favorite books. I put the Self-Aware Parent 1 and 2, and Living What You Want Your Kids to Learn.
Ooh.
That's Kathy's three books, and then A New Earth and Untethered Soul. So I'm going to click on the More button, and as it pulls up the More, it will say everything. So here it's got a place for a bio so you guys get to know me a little bit better. Here's my gender pronouns, he, him, his.
Oh, good.
Number of children, 3. My favorite quote is oink oink my good man, and that's from Rusty from National Lampoon's Vacation.
Is that really your favorite quote?
Oink oink my good man. It's when Rusty is in the nightclub and he's got the sunglasses and he gets busted by his dad because he's got this prostitute around his arm. And he just looks up to Chevy Chase and he says, oink, oink, my good man.
Of all the quotes, though, in the world, that's the one that really is most meaningful to you?
That's the one. Well, it doesn't say most meaningful. It's
True.
His favorite.
Good point.
Favorite movie, Star Wars, Dead Poets Society, Stand By Me. Favorite shows, Lost, This Is Us, Friday Night Lights, Parenthood.
Where's the Americans on there?
It's not quite made on my list. Favorite podcast, Freakonomics, Making Sense with Sam Harris.
Ooh, favorite podcast is good, you guys. At least fill that out so we can all... You know,
Motley Fool Money, Revisionist History, The Rewatchables, NPR First. So that's what's cool in my feed. Favorite books, my hobbies, piano, pickleball, occupation, life and leadership coach for men. I put in there just as a shameless self-promotional thing. So that's kind of the deal. It's not shameless.
Well,
shameful.
It's not,
sorry.
It's well, no, it's not. Meaning
oh,
that that's what you do for real.
Right. So anyways, so here's the deal. So you don't have to fill this in, but if you want to, you can. And that's kind of the deal. I'm going to stop sharing.
I think that's great. I love it.
And I'm going to just see if anybody has any. And that's just like, there's more things that it does. Actually, I'm going to go one more time. Sorry, I'm going to be Lady Redundant Woman here. I'm going to share this again and just go to, I think you guys can see my screen again. So I'm going to go back to where I was before. So what's cool is once you guys self-populate this, you can just click on, hey, who has differently wired children? You
and
click on that
people.
And the list of moms and dads that have differently wired children are there. So it's easier for you guys to kind of find each other without scrolling through all these different rows.
And countries and cities. That's what's funny on the Facebook page. Those are the things that where people's like, oh, someone else is from Texas. Where are you? And it's like, we should have a mechanism so people can find each other.
Right.
That's ridiculous.
So, and then open to connect. So that's the deal. And
I love that.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. And then I want to see if I can just go here. So under the account, so that is all under, so this is a, my account. So it's under my user profile. So that's where I edit my profile. That's the directory you just saw. This is the Zen Talk calendar. This is a listing of recorded Zen Talks.
Oh, very nice.
So it all kind of populates right there. So that's the last one we did was Zen Talk number 90, nudity, anger, gaming, and veganism. That's what we talked about. And then just going back one more page. Let's see. Recorded Zen Talk podcast, and then the Facebook community. So it's got a lot of different things on it. So
we should put Pop Culturing and Zen Parenting Radio in there too. Probably. Easy access to it.
Yeah. So right. It's not a complete thing, but it's something fun. And the invitation is for you guys to edit your profile so we can kind of, I want to know what Millie's favorite quote is.
I'm sure it's the same as yours.
I think if she's smart, it will be. Oink, oink, my good man. All right. So we don't have any questions right now. I usually have one or two, but I don't really have any. Sweetie had a few things, but if anybody has any questions or wants support or just wants to like blah, just like get something out, feel free to do that. And in the meantime, you had some prompts that you wanted me to share.
Well, just one that I thought was really interesting, and I can't remember where I got it. I may have been, I don't know. I can't remember if I got it in a book or a podcast, but I wrote it down and I've been like, do you guys ever write yourself emails and then keep forwarding them to yourself because you don't want to forget? So I forwarded this like 3 or 4 times to myself and I finally said, Todd, remind me to say this. And it sounds like when I say it, it sounds kind of like a negative, but that's not how I want you to view it. So the quote is, happiness is like a leaky balloon. Okay. And if you know where I got that, let me know because I can't remember. But what I loved about it was that it's a good image in that happiness is, and again, I know we talk a lot in Zen Parenting Radio about the word happiness. I don't mean happiness like we get something or we win an award or just kind of like the more joy kind of happiness where we're feeling good about ourselves, that kind of, and again, this is kind of like the difference between the word emotions and feelings. It's like such a fine line. They're different things, but they're similar. And I think we use the word happy more than we do joy. So I could also say joy is a leaky balloon, but I'll just say happiness is a leaky balloon. And what that means is that we've got to make a consistent daily effort to keep that balloon full. Hmm. Okay. So if you have like a Wednesday where you see a friend and you read a good book and you have a good experience or you go on a good walk and you're like, wow, I feel really filled up. And then the next day you're like, I'm going to sleep in late and watch movies all day or whatever. Well, that's fine, by the way. I have leaky balloon days for sure. But we can at least understand that it's like exercise. Like you don't exercise and lift weights one day and say, I'm good. Like it is a ongoing effort. And I don't like the word constant or chronic because those sound like our culture has made those words sound negative. And I guess what I mean is, I was talking to a girlfriend yesterday and we were talking about, she just feels busy all the time and overwhelmed all the time. And I always say to her, well, what are you doing during the day when you get that feeling? Or what do you do in the morning? Or what do you do? And she doesn't do anything. She just stays feeling overwhelmed and she wonders why she's overwhelmed and she doesn't understand why she's so busy, but she has nothing in place. If it'd be a mindfulness practice, a gratitude practice, a journaling practice, going outside and walking, laughing, she doesn't break up that monotony and she is not alone. It's not just about her, but I guess just that image of happiness being a leaky balloon is that you kind of, not leaky, scary, but like that you have to put a little, you got to put your own, I'm like a little pump, like a little balloon pump. And you got to pump up your balloon every day.
What is
day.
This?
I don't know. What does a balloon pump look like? You know,
balloon pump, you blow it with your mouth or you have the helium tank.
Oh, so the image is it's a leaky balloon. So you blow more air into it.
Yeah. Or because there's a little hole in the balloon.
Right. So like we can keep our happiness balloons full if we make every day, if we make an effort toward doing something. This sounds so repetitive, like, oh, self-compassion, self-care, but I try and come at it from different ways because sometimes things do start to sound repetitious and monotonous, or they sound cliche, and you have to figure out new ways to say it so it has that resurgence of energy.
So, sweetie, what did you do today to fill up your balloon?
Well, I read, or
what are you going to do today?
I read my book this morning.
Which book?
I'm rereading a Mary Pfeiffer book about writing.
How many
writing.
Times have you read that book?
I don't know, a couple times. I read it a lot. And then I meditated and I made some nachos.
Yeah.
They're really good. And I was writing downstairs. I've been having a funny text exchange with you and a few of my best friends. We've been talking about the Americans and how gruesome and funny it is. It's not funny, but we try and make light of the gruesomeness. I like funny text exchanges. And so far, and then I am here. Sorry, babe.
That's okay. So the moral of the story is fill up your balloon, or as I would say, fill up your own cup.
Mm-hmm.
Fill up your cup of happiness. And I would maybe just differentiate happiness and contentment. Happiness is something that's based off of external factors, and we all get happy when our kids come home with, they got an A or they scored a goal. Like, that's happiness. Contentment is an inner thing that is in spite of anything that's happening outside.
Yeah, I like that definition. And also the joy piece is the understanding of those two things, that I kind of feel like joy can be, and I'm just making this up, but like a mixture of the two. Like, it's okay to get happiness from outside things. Like, if someone says something really nice about you, you can take that in. You don't have to be like, no, I'm only for contentment. You know, take it in, enjoy it. But contentment is the understanding that it's, that feeling good is really an inner job, and joy is kind of having both, you know? But I do like the different, you know, like the quote is happiness is a leaky balloon. So I didn't want to change the quote to contentment is a leaky balloon.
Yeah. Cause whoever wrote that is not as smart as I am.
Correct. You know who I think it was is Emma. I can't say her last name. Sapaya. She is a mindfulness teacher. Anyway, if I find it, I'll let you guys know, but that is my,
That's
my thought. And I obviously have other thoughts, but if people have questions.
That's your leaky balloon anecdote?
That is my leaky anecdote. Anita put balloons. That's cute.
I know.
So somebody, look what Joe just said.
I know. What is the woman or the man's name who was killed?
Oh, George Floyd?
George Floyd. Yeah. So Joe lives in Minneapolis and he says in his text, in his chat, our neighborhoods here in South Minneapolis have been on fire and ransacked all night, and I'm exhausted today from being up late, keeping an eye on things and making sure friends are safe. So, yeah, I mean, there's nothing I can do to fix Joe's issue. Just create some space for him to feel his feels and know that we're thinking about you, and it's a sad situation that's going on in Minneapolis right now. The only thing I know about it is what I get from the 4 or 5 minutes from my NPR Up First thing. I don't feel the need to watch the videos and listen to the ongoing coverage of it, but I know it's an epidemic of what's happening.
Well, it's so repetitious. Like, and I mean that, like, why when something like that occurs over and over again, and we're seeing it, and you know, we know what's happening, and how, and again, I'm asking this question not for an answer, but how does that happen again in such a blatant way? And not just that, but the Amy Cooper thing in, you know, like, two things that I'll share. One is on the Zen Parenting page, not on the Team Zen page, but I will post it there too, so you guys can see it. Julie Lithcott-Hames, who was a speaker at our conference last year, she wrote the book Real American, about her experience as an African-American woman in this country, multiracial. She wrote an amazing blog about what's been going on the last couple of days, and I shared it on the Zen Parenting page, and she has all this list of things that we can do, suggested reading, podcasts, all that kind of thing at the end of the blog. And then underneath the blog, I just posted this morning another list, 75 things that white people can do Very specific, white people can do. It's about who to follow on social networking, what podcasts to listen to, what books to read, and you know, activism, where to donate money. It's a really extensive list. And like I said, I will put it on our Zen Parenting, our Team Zen page too, because I'm going to take it one by one, meaning I know many of us can say, I am paying attention. But then when do our methods shift? And it's not just about taking to the streets. It's about when do we start putting money and voice to certain things? When do we start speaking up when a joke is told that is off color? When do we start really taking a stand instead of just saying, this is no big deal? Or this small thing is no big deal. I actually saw someone posted the same kind of triangle that's used for sexual assault, where it's like, here's the things at the top that we are so, as a country, we claim we're so against. Obviously the lynching and, you know, mass incarceration and, you know, racial profiling. And we're like, yes, yes, bad. But there's all these things underneath that we let slide that lead to that thing. Mm. And we all have a lot of unlearning to do. Todd and I have a lot of, we take walks sometimes and talk about our own history and what we learned and a lot of unlearning. And we have to, it's not about admitting, I mean, it is about admitting to it yourself. It's not about just going out and saying it. It's really taking the time to learn more about our history and about that we were marinated in racial issues, that we were told things that weren't true, that we were brought up with it. And we don't have to point fingers and blame. We just have to do something about it.
Well, and that's kind of what's cool is a lot of times when these horrific stories occur, we feel paralyzed and mm-hmm. we're not sure what to do. And, you know, whatever Julie's list is, we'll go over it. And I'm sure we'll do certain things to kind of get energy moving in a certain direction. And that just the idea of moving from this state of helplessness that I sometimes feel like, how can I fix what's going on in Joe's neighborhood right now? Like, I feel somewhat helpless. But the minute you decide to do something, take action, whatever it is, you know, make a phone call to a friend or donate some money or whatever it is that's on Julie's list, I feel like that just that energy getting moving in a certain direction, you know, can have some really interesting ripple effects.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I like the way you said that, interesting ripple effects, because just in the last 2 years, you know, the African-American women that I follow on social networking, who I've learned so much from, and then they will point to something that leads me to a book. And then they will point to something that I haven't considered. Like one of the videos I watched this morning was what to say when people say something like, but what about black on black crime? Why aren't we talking about that? And this wonderful woman, Francesca Ramsey, I think her name is, kind of explained even the history of that and how that's used as an excuse. Or when people say Black Lives Matter is a terrorist group, and it's like, no, this is, and I had Alicia Garza, which is one of the women who, the three leaders of Black Lives Matter, she was a speaker at a conference I went to a couple of years ago. So I feel like I was able to get, you know, better understanding talking points around that issue. And why are talking points important? Because people say things like that to me. And I need to have a educated and thoughtful response, not a, well, I don't know, or maybe you're right, like a educated, not an angry response, but an educated response. So that's our work, you know, not only unlearning, but having an understanding. And
Funny, we were just talking, Kathy and I love listening to Rewatchables podcast, and they did one on Boomerang, which is that comedy with Eddie Murphy.
Which is one of our favorite
movies. I mean, it's Halle Berry, Robin Givens, it's really good. And one of the hosts of the podcast is an African-American man. And what's funny about that movie is it actually did really, really well in the box office. Mm-hmm. But it was reviewed kind of badly and is just kind of regarded as a non-successful film, even though it made a bunch of money and any other standards, as long as the movie makes money, it's successful. And one of the reasons that it got backlash in the reviews back when it came out in whatever, early 90s or whenever it was because there was very few white people in the movie. And what the guy said is like every other movie that's ever been created is pretty much
100% white.
100% people. White. So the second that we, you know, he's speaking as an African-American man, the minute we have one movie that's kind of all ours, us white folks, and I'm speaking in generalizations, get so offended.
Well, critics were saying I couldn't see myself in that movie, and yes. They didn't believe that certain professionals, that they didn't believe it was realistic.
Yeah.
Which, what does that tell you about your, you know, sense of understanding or entitlement?
Right.
So, we're getting off track, but I kind of feel like Todd said, like, you know, Joe is so close to what's going on and it's so scary and he's got to deal with the more immediate situation that he's in, that is close to his home. And, you know, his is like right this minute, but we all have this possibility of, you know, we all have to do something. If it be unlearn our own experiences so we can teach our kids something different and not just tell them, but demonstrate it, practice it, live it. It's not just about saying, you know, things like all people are equal. Like, what does that mean? How do you show up in that way? How do you,
And it's funny, like, you know, what we can do, you know, we're a community, you know, there's 18 people on the call right now. And this will go out to about 119 of us. That's about how big our community is. And, you know, we could just take a breath and send Joe some loving, yep, healing thoughts.
And his city.
Send his city, men and women who are pissed, who are doing things right now to express their anger. Send them loving, healing thoughts. Send the loving, healing thoughts to the police officers. Send loving, healing. This is not an either or thing. Everybody needs love, healing thoughts. So I just want to just create some space. Just have one breath of, you know, just settle into it a little bit. I don't know.
Well, I remember a couple of years ago, I was listening to a great podcast about, and I can't even remember what community it was in. I'm going to have to do some research to find it, about how they were training their police officers to handle their own maybe racial bias that they're not even aware that they have. And then also how to support people who are mentally ill, because those were two places that police were not trained in, didn't even see their own challenges, and that the police force, what the man who was in charge was focusing on, making them more aware of how you treat somebody who's in a psychotic break, how you react or respond to a person of color if you haven't even investigated your own history with racial bias. Like, I was like, oh, this is the future. Like, I felt really like, you know, but we're seeing that this training isn't taking place everywhere.
Right.
And it needs to be, you know, we need to push for it.
Yeah.
So
you don't really have any questions, at least not yet, but I know you're out there. I just typed in saying who has questions, who's struggling, who's complaining about something, who needs support about something. You know, otherwise Kathy, who never runs out of ideas.
I always have something to say.
Sure.
Don't you worry. Trying to have better Molly, but challenge. I'm just reading something. Hold on, guys. Oh, okay.
Would you like to ask? I think that's Laura.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just ask her. Do you want to? I just unmuted her and then she unmuted. Are you there?
Emmy? Yes, yeah. Lisa. Hi.
Hi,
it's that was me.
Laura. Hi, Lisa. Mm-hmm.
That's okay.
Will you ask your question again?
Sure. So, it's more just like modeling, you know, and when escalations come and I can see that my husband's being triggered and going, having, shutting down, to be quite frank, not able to hear. Like when we're having a debate, he can feel very criticized. So he has a really hard time receiving than just basic conversation. And I have a 15 and 17 year old. So they're, you know, adults, right? And their feedback, dad, you know, what about this? And he shuts down. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying, what I'm worried about is how they can then give up, right? In terms of circling back, like, it's not even worth it. I don't even want to talk to him. It's not, he's not listening. It's less about him and more about what they're learning as they go into relationships about how to resolve it, how to circle back. What do they need in that relationship? And I need to model that because it's my husband, right? It's our relationship. How do I circle back? So I'm trying to you know, circle. Okay, we need to come back. We have to talk about this. We have to apologize. And it's tricky because he can get triggered again. So it's natural. You want to avoid the drama. You want to avoid the tantrums. You want to avoid the escalation. So it's easy for all of us to keep peace. Don't go there. Mm. But I want to teach that there's a way, right? So I'm struggling with that with their age, you know, getting ready to go to school. I want to try to just focus on that because then I feel they shut down. They don't express their feelings as much. So that's pretty much it.
So Lisa, let me see if I can understand this. So sometimes your husband, a term I use, you like to use is below the line. He reacts instead of responds.
Yes. I've heard you use that exactly.
And then, there's an impact on you and your two kids, 15 and 17 year old boys, girls,
girls,
two girls. And then you want to kind of help him, you know, come full circle, like, okay, you dropped a little line, but how are we going to repair this?
Yeah. And it's, you know, in the moment, it's really hot, right? So it's like, okay, that's not working now, but which I can deal with crisis because that's what we do. We survive. But then it's not just letting it go, you know, like got to circle back, how to come back when he's can be more above the line, when he can hear us and not just like, oh, thank God that's over, and avoiding it. Right. Cause then it doesn't heal and then it gets scarier and nobody wants the blowout. So there's patterns in those habits. So
for sure. Awesome. Okay. Sweetie, you want to start?
It's up to you.
Do you like?
So, you know, it's interesting when you said this word, and this may not always be your intro, when he's coming back into the fold, but you said, you know, I ask him to come back and apologize or whatever it may be. And I don't know if you really do that, or if you were, you know, just kind of saying that is one of the things that you're asking for. But I think that when we're in this situation, it's like, it's almost like we have to dismantle it a little bit. And instead of focus on what just happened and dealing with exactly the words he said and dealing with the impact, which I kind of feel like is the surface level, it's, and again, this could be all of you together, all four of you, or just you and him first. And instead of talking about that he needs to apologize, which will, like you said, get him defensive again, it's more about, tell me what happens when they say that to you, or what happens in you. Become, you know, it's like the language we always talk about, get curious rather than trying to stop him from doing that or have him apologize or control him. And I know those aren't intention, but instead of living on that level of we got to control this, it's like really go to him about what happens when you shut down. If it be the body awareness piece, I don't know how, if he feels disconnected or connected body wise. Some people are more floating heads and he'll be like, I don't know what happened. I just, you know, lost it. And if he can't connect to the body piece, say, ask him questions like, what does it remind you of? Is it like your mom? Is it like your dad? Is it like school? And you're not, and he, I know sometimes these questions can sound therapeutic and someone can feel like you're, you know, diagnosing them. You're not looking for absolute answers. It's about living in the questions of it. Like, what's going on? And
in addition to that, maybe you start out like, you know, what goes on? Because, you know, some guys be like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't feel anything about it. I just get pissed. You know, he might say that. That's something I have said and a lot of other guys have said. So, but I like Kathy's prompt, like, you know, what's going on with you? And you know, once again, it's not about what you say, it's how you say it. Because if you say, what's going on with you? Like, forget it. There's no way that's going to land well. Instead, can you do it from this place of empathy? Like, I really want to kind of support you and help you figure this out. Or you can start with yourself saying, when I see you drop a little line or get really angry, I get really, really scared. So maybe you can kind of model what you want him to do first, because sometimes when somebody starts asking questions, like, I don't feel like getting interrogated right now by my wife. Instead, you lead with what happens to you and just say, I'm a little scared that there's a disconnect between you and I, or between him and your daughters. So I would start there. And the only thing you have control over is what energy are you bringing to this conversation? I think you're right not to do it while it's hot. I think that's really, really smart. And do it when things are a little bit more chill. And then, you know, your husband may or may not do exactly what you want him to do, whether it's an apology or reconnecting or repairing with your daughters. But you have the ability to help your daughters understand, like, you know, we're all just trying to do the best we can. And sometimes your dad gets really, really mad. And it's something that we're all working on together. And, you know, I don't know.
And going off of that, like, again, even with your daughters, instead of staying on the surface of your dad just gets mad, you can start to explain to them, what your dad has explained to me, girls, is that because he was criticized a lot as a kid, he gets triggered and then he can't talk to you. And it just becomes this vicious cycle. And because I think when we say things to our kids, like they just get mad and you just have to understand, our kids are left helpless. Like, okay, so you're just telling me that I have to deal with feeling like misunderstood or not heard or maybe even abused.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. And the other one.
Sorry. And invite your daughters to help them understand what it is that they are feeling.
Well, and that's the whole point of that experience.
That's what I'm worried about most, because what I see then is my older one in particular is not having a harder time expressing her feelings because she's more shut down now. So I'm trying to like, well, how do you feel when he says that? Tell him how you feel. And I'm trying to feed that part of it. That's what I'm more concerned about, is the repercussions, you know, rather than being, okay, this is what's happening with dad and why we need to adjust. It's more of what can they do to feel empowered and develop habits, you know, differently of how to handle it when that happens. Just more of a connection to their feelings.
Yeah, and I can identify that it's scary. Like, then all of a sudden, are we all tiptoeing around dad? Like, that's not a really healthy dynamic. You know, I had that when I was younger. My dad had rageful moments. Not that your husband does, but my dad did.
Oh, yeah.
So we would have to tiptoe around him. And it's just, there's a toxic residue that happens as a result of that. So, you know, and then just all know that this is all one big bag of learning for you, for your husband, for your daughters. Even when you think, oh, my daughters are shut down just because your husband's shut down, they may learn to do that, or they may learn, hey, I don't want to do what my dad did.
Point.
So there is possibilities that there's some learning that you can't even comprehend.
And there's the place in the middle, which is you're having an like, I was just reading something or writing something about the ACEs score, which for those of you who don't know what that is, it's like, you know, the traumatic childhood experiences, we now know that those can lead to all sorts of physical and emotional challenges later on in life. Like, we now know this to be, it's as a research-based understanding. This is what pediatricians are now looking for. This is a thing. But what the thing is it's about traumatic experiences that weren't processed. Okay, so we can't protect our kids from never having a traumatic experience, if it be with their parent or somebody else or a friend. But what we can do, which is what you're doing, is talk them through it. And they may not at 17 or 14 be like, got it, mom. But the fact that you're not letting it just sit there and you're not saying, well, that's just your dad, he's mad, and making them hold it, you're actually saying, that sucks. He's working on it. What happens with you guys when that, and sometimes it's less about what happens with you and let's go fix it with dad, and just more about how can I support you? Because this is the thing is, and this ends up with a lot of women and moms end up feeling like they have to be the ones to connect and solve and heal and help everybody understand each other. I mean, I sure feel that way a lot of the time. Like, you know, I got to make sure you understand you, and brother understands sister, and Todd understands this one. Like, it's this like feeling that it's all on our shoulders, and you don't have to, it's not all on your shoulders. The only part you need to be focused on is after that happens is just bringing it to the surface. That's all. You don't have to solve it. You don't have to be like, okay, now go back to dad and dad, you apologize. Even bringing it to the surface decreases the likelihood of a trauma experience being like taken into the body. And it also teaches them that they can talk about it, that it's not something to be ashamed of. And it also, like, you know, think about all the things. It shifts the dynamics. It allows them to have greater self-compassion and compassion for others. So I think sometimes in the moment with our kids, this is about everybody, we'll be doing something new, or we have something challenging that happens, and then we say a good thing or do a good thing or read a good book to them. And we're like, but I don't know if it solved the problem. You're making deposits in the right direction and you reap the benefits of that later. It doesn't always show up immediately. Do you know what I mean? Like, your child at 17 or 14 may not have the cognitive capacity yet, or the emotional maturity to really take all those lessons and put them towards something. But as Cameron always says to me, it may look like we're not listening, but we always are. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So you, instead of thinking, oh,
I'm writing feverishly. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Instead of thinking like, I don't know if I solved this or it happened again, or wait, they're sad again, but you're still putting deposits in all the time. So you're keeping it like it's not going down. You're just kind of keeping everything out there. And then that's what, because the truth is, I don't know if that visual, I'm seeing it mm-hmm. as a picture. So I'm not sure if what I just said translated, but when they get older, having someone be angry is not going to be foreign to them. And their physical experience will not be foreign to them. Talking about it will not be foreign to them. So sometimes we think if I could just avoid all these things, then my kids wouldn't get hurt. But the thing is, they're learning how to handle it.
Yeah. Is it possible that this is happening for your children
yes.
right now? You have a husband who sometimes gets mad. This could be the absolute perfect learning lesson that they need to have for some future partner yep. 10 years down the road or something like that. That doesn't mean like, you know, Pollyannish, like, oh, everything is meant to be. But really, that there is some, I judge that there is some beauty in whatever happens, whether it's COVID or a husband that gets mad or a daughter who's defiant. All of this is happening for us. It's all an inside job. So even this, Lisa, is for you. Like, how are you going to, you know, because it's so easy, like, to think of is your daughters as the victims and your husband is the
perpetrator. And you as the bridge.
And you're the bridge. But this is happening for you too. And it's hard to kind of get in that place because this is scary. You have a husband who gets mad. You have daughters who you don't know how they're
doing. Like,
yeah, this is kind of a scary thing.
Yeah, it is scary. And it's mm-hmm. scary. It can be that it's very physical. He was very physically abused when he was young. So it comes and it literally is like comes out of his body. His eyes pop out. Like it gets scared. I've seen them be scared, the kids.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Yeah. But that's helpful.
And when you and your husband have more quiet moments or a walk or a time when he's open, you know, and you have the conversation, like, tell me what happens or tell me more about your childhood, because everybody wants to be seen. And even though talking about it can be difficult and he may gloss over it, the more you ask, the more the door opens. And then you have the possibility to share with him, not to heal him and solve him. You're not trying to change him, but even saying something like, have you heard about ACEs scores that they have found that kids who, you know, so he's not alone. Like they have found that like the reaction he has is very connected to what he experienced. And what you're trying to say to him is you're not a bad guy. You're not like a horrible person.
He's not a bad guy. He's a wounded child.
He's a wounded kid. And it's like,
literally. Yep.
Yes, literally. And so what happens, it's like he's an adult brain. He feels criticized and he goes 7 years old. Mm-hmm. And relaying that you see that and understand that about him opens the door. It's kind of like, remember what Carl Jung said, the more we focus on what kids or adults are doing well, the more capacity they have for change. Mm-hmm. It's not the other way around of pointing out all the things they're not doing. It's here's all the things you have. And then they have more capacity to change. Well, it's paradoxical, but true.
So two things. One is, I remember when my dad used to get rageful. He would get really big. His energy would be big. There would be verbal, physical, and emotional abuse towards my mom. And he would get really grandiose, like mm-hmm. really big. Mm-hmm. And then he would spiral into this puddle of shame. And it was this dance between grandiosity and shame. And I just wondered, does your husband experience the shame as well, or you don't know?
Oh, for sure. Get very quiet the next day, head down.
Totally.
You know, I literally like the eyes will drop. I can see it. It's like he's relived the shame of when he was a child and it's gone into his body. And he's like, oh, that's why I'm beaten, because I am this bad person.
Yes.
It's so sad. Yeah. And that's what's coming out. Yeah. Yeah.
You just seem like you're in such a good place to support
him. Yeah, you're such a lovely
person. I could just kind of, I usually can't keep people's energy. That's Kathy's job. But I just feel like you have this loving tenderness mm-hmm. about you for your husband. Because
you don't feel anxious. You're not an anxious person.
Not right now. I had a couple hours to be able to formulate this. But yeah, a couple days. Otherwise, I was like, oh my God, I can't live with this anymore. I'm like writing my divorce letter, you know, but I'm better now.
And it's okay to, you know, because there's a lot of people out there that would get into villain mode, which is just point fingers and blame. And you probably have those moments just like the rest of us. But when the dust settles, you're in this kind of like loving, nurturing place. And it's funny, Joe is the only other guy that's on this call other than me, says, I've been that person at times. I needed to figure out what was going on with me. And it was a lot easier once I stopped placing blame and projecting and realized that I had some leftover childhood neglect and abuse that I needed to bring to light and work through. if he can open up to some therapies, it would probably help him get through it much easier, especially if he can see that he's doing it for his daughters and you as well. And that's interesting because a lot of guys don't want to change for them
themselves
because that's weak. Right. And I don't need to be changed, blah, blah, blah. So in a way, sometimes you can use children as the leverage. Like if you're not going to do it for yourself, do it for the future partners of your daughters. Do it for your daughter's ability to navigate through this territory when they start, you know, having life partners. Because, and sometimes that little nudge will kind of, it's just tough though, because, you know, inviting somebody into therapy is.
Well, what about tribe?
Well, of course. I mean,
I thought about that. Yeah. When you've, whoops, when you've talked about that, I'm like, boy, I would love for him to connect and feel that through men, through that male energy, so he could keep his, you know, I think there's a lot of shame. And we tried a little bit with the kid stuff for sure, because that's when I get scared. You know, I go to the scared place, which is he ever going to get, like, face some of this stuff for his, first of all, for his own sense of sanity, but, like, for the long term, right? Like, for the kid's sake, for us to have, you know, different quality of life. And I wish, but maybe I'll keep trying, but it's hard.
It is hard. Guys don't like to be fixed. And I just want to say, just invite, you know, you can send him my website. I'm more than happy if he's willing. Cause a lot of times women will be like, my husband needs to be coached by you. and that doesn't work really well.
Send him to Todd. Yeah. Send him off.
That doesn't work real well. So I always make sure that the guys are the ones actually asking me for the help, because if they're doing it because their wives are making them, the odds are it's not going to go over well. But the invitation can be extended. And it's funny, I used to give the advice of the gentle nudge. And then just in the last few months, as far as, you know, because what we hear all the time is a mom or a wife will say, how do I get my husband into your group? Or how do I get my husband to read this book? And I would always say gentle nudges. And just in the last few months, I've kind of modified that message a little bit. And I guess I'm encouraging the women on this call or on this team to stand in your
power.
In your power and say, for this family to work, I need you to step up. And that's a lot more than a gentle nudge. And maybe the correct answer is somewhere between gentle nudge, because that's too passive. And maybe I need you to step up is a little too in your face, but somewhere in between there. I used to be like, you know, just be so gentle. I'm like, no, this is a family system and you're not stepping up in the way I need you to step up. So how can you, you know, how can we help support you in getting you to assert yourself?
Yeah.
That's helpful.
Yeah. And it can come up in the conversations that you have, because it obviously doesn't have to be Todd and it doesn't have to be tribe, but just the fact that you have that connection and understanding, you know, when you're having, you know, what happens in your body and you're having that kind of conversation with him and you get curious and maybe he is a little more vulnerable than usual, say, you know what, I actually know somebody who like does this, like talks to men about this, and he may or may not be interested, but sometimes it takes a few times of not demanding it, but saying, I know people. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is not something you have to do alone. And that's the one thing that I always feel good about suggesting tribe is it's a lot of different kind of guys like this. I sometimes think we think drum circle of men and they're all sitting around, you know, Indian style meditating. And that's not like these guys are, every kind of guy you've ever met. You know what I mean? Some of them more challenged than others. Some of them, you know, still a little, there's still guys in the tribe who are like, but they're showing up.
Yeah. There's guys and they come in, it's really no obligation. And it's funny, like we had our Wednesday night virtual meeting last night. And after we get centered in the same way we got centered with you all today, we just create a space of these breakout rooms and we offer the prompts. Like, I am angry that blank, I am sad, I am afraid, I am joyful. And then the other guys in the group are simply there to listen and maybe reflect back what they heard. And that is not something that happens in the boardroom, at the bar, on the golf course. That space simply does not happen anywhere else, which is why I created this thing. I'm like, this is freaking stupid that I can't go to any other person other than Kathy about what I'm feeling. And I think there's something sacred of a circle of men in a way that I hope that a woman would feel there's something sacred that happens when all you girls get together.
Of course, yeah, women's circle is so important.
So anyways, I turned this into a commercial for the tribe, but that's fine.
No, thank you. That was really, really helpful. A lot of nuggets. Yeah, thank you so much.
And feel free to keep us updated as much as you feel like you need to or you want to. So we have about 6 minutes
left,
Helen
had a
which
question.
Isn't enough for Helen, but I'm going to try it anyways.
Oh, Anita did too. Oh, maybe Anita got something out
Let's
of
go with Helen just because she is. Hi, Helen.
Hi there.
What's up?
You hear me okay?
Yep.
Yeah, it's a question about my daughter. She has been quite aggressive and angry recently in terms of just every time we connect, like even getting up first thing in the morning, and she's always got, you know, there's always a problem. And it's almost like she's looking for a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very disrespectful and saying things like very provocative, like whatever I'm eating, it's like, oh, that's disgusting. And don't speak like if you're in company, don't speak, you're embarrassing and stuff like quite, you know, quite out of order and quite disrespectful. So I think in a way I'm being quite loving in terms of avoiding being punitive, and Matthew and my husband and myself were kind of like helping each other there. So this morning it was like, I managed to say, like, when you treat me like that, I feel bad. I can't change the way you're treating me, but I wish you didn't. I don't like it. And I wish you would change it. I wish you'd be more respectful, more loving. So recently she gave us a request that she didn't want to go to her creche on like tomorrow after school. She just wants to come straight home. And we're both working at home, which is fine, but we're really working. I've got busy, like Friday afternoon's really busy. So I said, well, you know, you really have to be like on your own. And that was fine. So she was fine with that. But on top of this, sort of this bad attitude she's developed, I didn't want to, like, I want to say to her, you know, you're expecting a favor from us, but in actual fact, you're treating us badly, you know, you don't get special treats. But I don't want to make it like a punitive thing. So I was wondering, like, you know, rather than trying to just focus on the problem, but is there something behind that that's maybe causing that attitude and causing that problem? Which I just don't know about it. So I wondered, my question, sorry, but it's a bit of a long intro, and we can maybe come back to it next time, but because you have time to answer, but how do I find out, how do I like dig more and get more information about what could be behind that causing that problem? So yeah, that's my question.
Helen, is she 12? How old is she?
She's 10. She's just turned 10.
So just a few things I heard you say. You said things like, I wish you would be more respectful and things like that. My only other toss to you or invitation is, maybe you start with your own feeling states, because, you know, the way I would receive, I wish you'd be more respectful.
She said that she's being disrespectful.
Do you make the request to her verbally, you know, I wish you would, you know, behave differently to her? Okay. Yeah. I'm not saying you can't say that, but on top of that, just own your feelings. Like I get sad when you do this, or I get scared when you do that. And then regarding, like, you know, the punitive, transactional, the only other thing I want to say is, and I think we all know this, from a transactional standpoint, as parents, we're always going to be giving more than what we get back. So that's just kind of like, welcome to the club, as I'm sure you already know that. But like the whole idea of, you know, first this, then that, or transaction, it's tricky. And of course, there's something underneath it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? So anyways.
And that's what I was going to say is, two things to know. Whenever a child is, you know, it's the Rob Bell thing where he said, if a, you know, child is being miserable, it's because they're feeling miserable. Mm-hmm. Like that's, you know, but I also, when I say that, I don't mean, and now it's your job to fix them. Like sometimes she may be angry about something that has nothing to do with you. And sometimes we forget that. We get really easily offended by our children, and we think that it's whatever they're feeling is something we need to solve, instead of kind of being an observer and a supporter rather than a solver. Okay. So it's like, you can point out to her. And again, Helen, it's not like you have to change the way you talk to her in every way, but instead of like, you know, this is you against me. It's more like, whoa, something's going on. And you're not so blown over by it. Mm-hmm. There's a little more of a separation between her. Now, she may be trying to tell you something. She may be, you know, I don't know what's going on with her. She may be trying, and you can ask that question. You seem really angry with me. Is there something I missed? You know, is there something I'm not seeing? Like, be as vulnerable as you can with the question. Don't try and make it a perfect question of what do you need now? You know, it's more like a, is there something I missed? And what I want you to know and what I want everyone to know is you may never find out, and that's okay. Just because you're curious and asking the question and showing empathy and compassion for the way she feels is the most important thing. Sometimes things with kids just resolve. It could have been two bad dreams in a row. It could have been her worried about next year. It could have been a boy or a girl she's interested in. It could have been a friendship that it may have nothing to do with you. It may be, I remember one of my daughters was so into a TV show and she couldn't stop thinking about the characters. And finally, when she was able to tell me that, she's like, I've just been, she didn't use the word ruminating, but she's like, you know, that's what she was doing, ruminating about the characters. That has nothing to do with anybody else, but she needed to talk it through. So this is like, instead of I need to figure out why she's mad at me or I need to solve the problem of her anger, it's more about being sidelining yourself and being curious about it and being a support system. It's just a reframe, like a shift for you.
And I would just kind of like add, your goal, Helen, should be in as many exchanges as possible is be on the same side as your daughter.
Yeah.
And I know right now it's
she's making it
her
hard
against the two of you or against you.
She's making it hard.
She's making it very difficult. But if you could somehow communicate, whether through your words or your actions or your touch, like we're on the same team, because, and she's also going to give you her ugliest side because
it's unconditional.
You can handle it. Whereas her friend may not be able to, or her teacher or her coach or whatever. So yeah, we always see the ugliest side of our own kids. But just, you know, I'm thinking of John Duffy right now, like just make sure that you're as best you can be on the same team as your kid. And it's just easy for us to kind of forget about that lesson.
And get out of, you know, this is difficult to do too, but the two things that become really conflictual with each other is what we think parenting is. Is it relationship or is it my job to teach my children to do all these things and teach them and to be respectful and have manners? And I always go to the side of connection, and these things will show up in the way we connect. And these things, what my fingers are the respect and the, you know, the teaching manners. Like, but sometimes we have them out of order. So we're like, I'm going to disconnect from you and I'm going to teach you to not disrespect me. And that's, she remember what we were just saying before about kids will be more likely to change a behavior if they already feel seen. Then they have the motivation to change. So, but, and we're not being manipulative and making them change. We're just saying, I see all sides of you, just like, you know, just like our husbands, you know, when they get angry, I see all sides of you. I see, you know, and so there's, I guess what we always go back to, Helen, because, you know, you've been listening so long, is you're going to shift the dynamic just by the way you're looking at it. Mm-hmm. Instead of thinking you need to solve it and be like, I need to get to the root of this problem. No, you don't. You just need to be curious about it and demonstrate to her that you're there and allow her to decide.
When you change the way you look at things.
The things you look at change.
The things you look at change. It's a title of a book by Wayne Dyer I read a long time ago. I have no idea what he said in it, but I remember liking it. And
it wasn't his quote initially, but anyway.
It wasn't. Helen, so as we close, I just wonder if anything popped to you.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant though. Just communicating to her that she doesn't need to tell me, you know, if there's a problem, then, you know, like if I'm here, I'm on your side. We always say that we're on the same team. We're in the same team. And if she, you know, if there is something, then it's great. If she just wants to share it, then that's fine. If she doesn't, then that's fine as well. So I think that's the part I'm missing. And then the respect and everything comes
exactly
as a fruit from the relationship. Yeah, that's a good reminder too. Thank you.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And sometimes what our kids need, instead of me being a word person, I externally process everything, but sometimes kids just need to know they're supported and be given a hug and saying, do you want to watch a movie? And that's the way you're helping them through their problem. You know, sometimes it's not just tell me, sit across the table and tell me, because that's they may not need to do that. And if they do, great, doors open, you're there. But sometimes just a big hug. My girls have said, they'll say something like, I didn't even know I needed that, but I did, they don't even know, but so we just keep trying creative ways.
Yeah. You want to create the space for them to either emote to you or tell you whatever their deepest, darkest secrets. But sometimes the best thing you can do is watch a TV show with them,
mm-hmm.
or go get ice cream together.
And they will like a week later say, wow, I was having a bad day. And they'll be grateful that you didn't take that as an opportunity to have conflict with them, that you actually just were like, yep, bad day.
Yeah.
But it's hard in the moment.
I like to tell people when they get stuck, do the opposite. So if you're used to like pursuing, if she's really tough, you withdraw. Or if you're used to being more passive, then you step forward. Doesn't mean it's going to be the right thing, but just do something different and see what happens and learn from it. Because the one thing we know about these kids is they're going to give you another chance to screw them up the next day.
It's an optimistic way to end.
Or help them with whatever they're
connect doing. With them. And that it is an ongoing dance. There's never a day where we're like, good, we did it.
Yep.
Todd, we did it. They're all grown up now.
That's right. Our youngest is 12. She's done.
Yeah, we're done. They're cooked.
Let's go to the Key West and forget about these kids.
I know.
All right, guys. So keep trucking. Thank you so much. Fill out your member profile.
Yeah, go to your member profile. Are you going to send an email so they know?
I'll send it, but you'll get it tomorrow morning with all the stuff.
I'm excited to read everybody's favorite podcasts and books because I love podcasts and books. And I'll do my page too.
And you can do your quote?
Yeah, and it will not be yours.
What's going to be your favorite quote?
It will not be Oink Oink.
It's going to be something like there's no place like home or something like that.
No.
It's going to be something very typical like that.
Typical.
Yeah, not as good as mine. Let's have a contest for who picks up the best quote.
Yeah, let's make it a competition. Todd wants to compete all
Oink Oink, my good man.
All right. We love you guys.
Bye, guys. Keep trucking.
Bye.
Bye-bye.